You are listening to a podcast produced by the Jackson School of International Studies and the Ellison Center for Russian, East European, and Central Asian Studies at the University of Washington. This and other podcasts can be found on iTunes and SoundCloud. For more information, visit us at jsis.washington.edu/Ellison Center.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, colleagues. And first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for the invitation to present here today and everyone who came to listen to me. My talk today addresses people's relationships with an inconsistent and controversial infrastructural project of the Northern Sea Route. Actually, the picture in the title slide, on closer consideration, is the essence of what I'm going to talk about. It is a photo taken in July 2021 in the settlement of Dikson, lying on the shore of the Yenisei Bay. It is a former building of a hydrological base with two almost ruined banners. The first banner reads, for all year-round navigation through the Northern Sea Route. And the second one is even more famous. Democratization and glasnost, the information openness, are the laws of the perestroika. So it appears to be slogans from the late 80s. At the time then this settlement was at the peak of population size and prosperity. And these slogans are equally crucial to this community as people felt not only deeply involved in their country's recent changes, but also a close connection to maritime infrastructure, the functioning of which was the why of most local people's lives and local organizations' existence. And now the paint is almost peeled off, as you can see, and the building barely stands, and the local community uses it for current needs as windproof space for container storage and garages. And there is even a part of the building rebuilt as a snowmobile garage, as you can see in the in the right side of the picture. And the half-destroyed slogans are still hanging. You know, that might be just an indifference that keeps them from demolishing, but I will try to show during my today's talk that, at least metaphorically speaking, the Northern Sea Route is still of great importance for the community social imagination, notwithstanding its brokenness and irreversible changes. Here is the structure of my talk today. I will begin with comments on definitions and social imagination of Northern Sea Route. Yeah, I think I will proceed with an abbreviation, the NSR, so it is much shorter. And then I will tell a few words on the historical background of the phenomena. And then I will try to show that there is a significant gap between the modern official discourse on the NSR and its actual functioning. And it is actually affects the sociality of the particular communities on the NSR. Then I will move to the anthropology of infrastructure perspective to comment on why it might be an interesting topic for anthropologists. Afterward, I will take a closer look at the category of supporting ports, and finally, I will consider the case of Dikson as an indicative example of the reception of infrastructural promise by the local community. Before I begin, I would like also to make a disclaimer that all the data I'm operating was gathered before the military invasion of Ukraine, so I could not draw valid conclusions about the current situation because, like, in the last months, slight changes due to sanctions and gradual withdrawal from hydrocarbons, you know, becoming to be visible, but so far, I cannot say there is like a clear pattern. And actually, before I begin, I also would like to ask you a question to better understand how much detail I should go into. Like, what do you actually know about the NSR? Is it like a very familiar term for you? Do you hear that from TV or, I don't know, do you have any associations with this term? Yeah. Like, any associations, like, I don't know, like concepts connected to it or something?
Yeah. It's growing because of the changes around the Arctic.
Yeah, climate changes, right? Yeah.
Uh-huh. Access.
Yes, true. Exactly. That's like the most popular idea on the NSR. That's right. So it's not that familiar, right?
No, I would not say people think about this in their daily lives.
Yeah, for sure. No, that's not what I expected, but I'm really interested in, you know, how much discourse I should, you know, provide background to you. Yeah, okay.
I mean, I think probably I would say that people are aware that with climate change, the Northern Sea Route has opened up, that this has created new possibilities for trade, economically viable trade between the Far East and producing countries and the markets in Western Europe, and there's also tremendous resources in the region that had maybe historically been less accessible, and now they're more accessible. Mm-hmm. I would think that would probably be the extent, and also military implications of the Northern Sea Route and the Arctic generally.
A very hot topic.
So. But like I said, most people in their daily lives do not think about the Northern Sea Route.
Yeah, but still, that's actually a lot, you know. You know the whole idea of like the, yeah, thank
I,
you.
I might think about the Northern Sea Route more than most people.
Oh, so.
You know, but even though, I mean, most of us who are here probably have some knowledge about it, but I'd love, for my part, I'd love to hear your take on the history
and for sure.
Where it stands and everything, because it might be quite different.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was actually interested, like, you know, in your perception of official discourse, which I will try to deconstruct in a way. And, you know, it's just the interesting thing, you know, how obvious for you these narratives are. But yeah, okay, let me just proceed with that and we'll see. Here is the official definition of the NSR according to Russian federal law. In short, the Northern Sea Route is described as an aquatic area within the exclusive economic zone of Russia from Novaya Zemlya to archipelago to the Bering Strait. And the rationale of such demarcation is the harshest ice conditions in the Arctic Ocean. And in reality, it's actually, it's not an open ocean space. There one can choose almost any trajectory because they need to overcome the ice and shallow depth of Arctic seas, which often makes necessary rather sophisticated routes. You can see that on the upper picture, you know, there are like some zigzags and loops and there are quite sophisticated sometimes because of the ice. And it has like unpredictable length and timing to pass. And at the same time, it is not a narrow channel, you know, that limits its size and three dimensions to ships that can pass on it, like on Suez or Panama canals. This map I showed you is taken from the Northern Sea Route Administration website, and it is probably one of very few maps that depicts the NSR as an actual aquatic area. This is how a typical map of the NSR usually looks like. Maps like this are abundantly reproduced by Russian media, regional and federal authorities, and actually by scientists. And it is usually a line that goes through several locations. The combination of these settlements on the shore varies from map to map, but their general set is relatively fixed. The most frequent ones you can see on the right side of the slide, you know, like the most frequent one are Murmansk, Dikson, Tiksi, Pripyat, Petropavlovsk, Kamchatsky, and Vladivostok, and Providenia, Arkhangelsk, Indigo, Sabete, Dudinka, and Igarka are rarer, but still, you know, they are quite, you know, quite fixed. Yeah, like there are many of such maps, as you can see. It's, you know, the amount of settlements differ, but, you know, the idea is the same. It's the line, the, you know, stable points on the way. And here is one more map, in its essence, very similar to the previous one, but there are settlements that are quite rarely found in this row, such as the settlement of Ambarchik in Sakha-Yakutia, like in the right side. You know, its current population is like four people, four. And I must say, these are not the only one settlements on the coast, as you might guess, you know. But there are also many indigenous settlements, but they never appear in this row, and that's very important. I think some of you have already noticed that not all the mentioned settlements are within the current aquatic area defined by federal law from Kara Strait to Dizhnyov Cape. And this configuration of the social imagination of this phenomenon is partly due to the non-autonomy of ports in the aquatic area of NSR and their dependence on hub port in the European and far eastern part of Russia, like Murmansk, Arkhangelsk, and Vladivostok, from where settlements on the NSR are supplied. In that sense, I really like the way the Northern Sea rootishness loosening is indicated in this on this map by color. Like the red line of definitely the NSR area and like the yellow line of not quite NSR area, but it really reflects, you know, people's popular imagination on this phenomenon. And I try to demonstrate that by showing you all these maps, that in the social imaginations, these settlements are in a way a part of the northern route infrastructure. In contemporary political discourse, it is often called supporting seaports, опорные точки in Russian, but it is not clear on what principle they are chosen and how exactly they support the NSR shipping. Ambarchik, the four people, you know, is an extreme example for sure, but it gives a good impression on what kind of ports it could be. I will go into more detail later, but it is crucial to understand that it is not the principle of having tangible infrastructural objects, for instance, like repair or towing facilities, meteorological and ice monitoring services, like rescue centers, radio facilities, and so on. There might be none of these things in these supporting seaports, but nonetheless, they will be described in the political rhetoric and depicted on the maps as such. Tremendous number of works are written about the history of the Northern Sea Route, and I will not even try to give a comprehensive history of this infrastructure. I would like just to point out a few of the most important milestones, especially the evolution of navigation regimes along the Arctic Ocean. We can only speculate about the age of navigation in this area, but it is clear that it has existed in some form for a long time. The colonization of Siberia was accomplished mainly through the sea route and the rivers connected to it. But even before that, and definitely after that, the indigenous peoples living on the coast used maritime travel in one way or another. In the 18th century, and especially in 19th and early 20th centuries, numerous Arctic maritime expeditions were carried out under different flags. despite long-standing Russia's tendency to nationalize the use of this part of the sea, it was not undoubtedly the international affair. Actually, due to the active attention to the Arctic subject in the USSR related to geopolitical and economic considerations, significant investments were made in development navigation along the NSR and make it a national thoroughfare. The crystallization of the Northern Sea Route notion should definitely be attributed to this period, like first years of the Soviet regime. A significant milestone in the history of the NSR is considered to be the passage of the Alexander Siberikov vessel through the entire NSR during one summer navigation. No one had managed to do this before. Around the same time, the supporting infrastructure such as radio stations, weather stations, ice reconnaissance bases, and steamer coal supply bases were built. And most of the settlements now referred to as supporting ports appeared. In the early Soviet times, there were the first attempts to export minerals by sea, the most important of which is definitely the Norilsk Metallurgical Combine, and it is actually has been exporting its production via the NSR since like the first year of its existence, and actually to this day. However, it was still far from being a consciously operating thoroughfare. Despite the active use of the passage for military purposes during the Second World War, before the improvement of technologies, and most importantly, before the appearance of the nuclear icebreaker fleet, stable navigation was impossible. It became a permanently functioning passage in the 70s, and its primary functions were the export of minerals and the supply of coastal communities. All the settlements on the coast connected with the NSR functioning were supplied centrally, and most importantly, it were federal structures, not regional ones. In the 90s, transportation sharply decreased due to economic and social turmoil, and actually the unprofitability of many elements of the NSR functioning in the market economy. By the time of their revival, there was a significant technological shift. Many elements of infrastructure built in Soviet times, even if not destroyed during stagnation, have lost their necessity. The supporting ports, which we will discuss further, are the heirs of the Soviet period of using the NSR. Thus, the most important thing I would like to emphasize is that the concept of the Northern Sea Route in different historical periods has differed in its meaning, its functions, and the infrastructure involved. Since the end of the first decade of 21st century, the importance of the NSR in Russia's Arctic agenda has been steadily growing, and the concept meaning has partly changed. The modern image of the Northern Sea Route is in an inseparable connection with the state strategy to the Arctic, crystallized in the public rhetoric of the Arctic forums and official documents like development programs and resolutions, laws, plans, and it is transmitted through the mass media. And within the framework of these practices, the language of describing the Northern Sea Route is developed and assimilated. And there are actually several very important tropes on the NSR in Russian political discourse. I think you mentioned some of them, like most of them. Actually, it's its role is attributed to climate change. It is usually described as shorter the alternative to Suez Canal. You see, even in the picture, like, you know, they tried to make it obvious how much shorter the NSR is, and Yeah, ice melting because of climate change. And actually, the quote from Scandinavian scientists, you know, they actually use the same tropes, but, you know, in different, like, political perspective. But still, you know, these ideas are the same, like, you know, melting of ice. And as the joke before, maybe it's the only thing that climate change is good for, according to people's opinions, that, you know, like, it's the NSR. And actually all that, all these ideas, they imply the primacy of the transit function of the passage. It's like transit corridor, not something else, right? But if we look at the real numbers, the traffic on the NSR is indeed growing. You can see on this graph that cargo traffic has recovered from, like, prolonged recession here in the 90s and 2000, like, zeros. And now it's, like, skyrocketing. And, like, during past years, like, 2019 and 2020, it's even higher. However, on closer consideration, one can see that the actual share of transit cargo is non-sufficient compared to total amount of cargo. You can see it's like number of ships, which is, you know, actually almost non-existent. It's like, I don't know, 20, 30 ships that passing this passage by for a year. That's like even impossible to compare to Suez Canal, for instance. And paradoxically, real ship traffic on the NSR falls into four very different categories. The largest one is oil and gas export, and the huge part of it is, you know, it's like two biggest sites, industry sites. And this is actually the main reason for the graph's dramatic increase in traffic volume. These are usually, you know, quite large self-sufficient ships that don't need any infrastructure at all. The second one is supplying coastal communities. It is traffic from hub ports, I mentioned before, like Murmansk, Arkhangelsk, and Vladivostok, to the NSR zone. And supplying ships are, as a rule, small and equipped with cranes and all necessary technologies to unload on shore without any infrastructure. The third one is international transit. As we discussed just now, it's really insufficient comparing to all others. And also there is like Arctic tourist cruises. It's, as a matter of fact, it doesn't involve the NSR aquatic zone per se, because it's usually like Franz Josef Land, Svalbard, and North Pole. But still, it's connected to NSR functioning because it gives work for icebreakers in summer. Like our nuclear icebreakers usually carry out cruises from Murmansk to this place in summer months. So the practices of navigation on the NSR corresponded to the listed functions are connected with different customers, different ship operators, and different models of navigation on the NSR in terms of necessary services, seasonality, time, and financial expenses. However, the most important thing is that they differ in what configuration of like flexible infrastructure of the NSR is eventually involved and what elements of infrastructure complex turn out to be visible as a result of this use. It means like the principal multiplicity of the NSR for different user audiences. Now that I have discussed what NSR is, I can move on to the question of what is in this infrastructure for anthropologists. Interest in infrastructures among sociologists and anthropologists is not new. It has been sustained for at least two decades. Infrastructures are understood not so much as technical artifacts, but as phenomena constitutive of social relationships, and at the same time influenced by them. That is like fundamentally social, technical in their by their nature. Anthropologists focusing on boring technical elements examine what these elements can tell about like the particular fragment of social reality. And political discourse is a power source for defining the scope and content of an infrastructural phenomenon and how one speaks of an infrastructure. By its very essence, infrastructure is a product of the state, or at least an object of its scrutiny and arena for institutionalizing its power. The aesthetics of infrastructure represent a vivid symbol of development and progress. Infrastructure is often so closely, like metonymically associated with the body of the state that the forms of its manifestation, infrastructural manifestation, have an enormous impact on citizens' relations with the state. In particular, they base their judgments about the current political situation on their observation of infrastructures. And notably, the frame of imagination of infrastructure is often set by political agents, which is particularly evident in the case of project of great significance for the formation of national identity. For instance, like Trans-Siberian Railway in the beginning of 20th century, or like for supranational identity, like Pan-American Highway nowadays. And the Northern Sea Route is no exception. A stable set of ideas about the geographical and functional content of infrastructure on which political rhetoric is based influences the imagination of infrastructure by local and professional communities and other social groups associated with the infrastructure. A key problem in considering infrastructures seems to be the dependence of the scope of infrastructure on the act of categorization, the definition of what is infrastructure and what is not. Local communities' perception of the scope of the infrastructure they deal with, like its boundaries, configuration of its parts, can have real consequences on their life choices. Here is like a simple example described by anthropologists Morten Nielsen and Morten Pedersen. They described the situation, then the idea circulated in the community that an old power plant will be reconstructed, causes people to move to its neighborhood and buy land there. Even though in reality there were only rumors of the reconstruction plans, but still it highly influenced their lives. Anthropology of infrastructure offers to look at infrastructures from the perspective of the local communities, to analyze the expectation of the people about the future perfect produced by such projects. It allows seeing the processes of infrastructural development not as relations of an abstract state and average population, but as much more complex interplay of various actors. A critical focus on such research is the analysis of reception of planned, unfinished, promised infrastructure to communities. The emotional assessment by local communities of signs of present and conversely, the meaningful absence of infrastructure, changes in technology and standards that entail reconfiguring social relations. The Northern Sea Route is an extraordinary infrastructure in the sense that at the level of official declarations, it includes entire port settlements. And in this very wording, actually, the entire settlement turns out to be a supporting port, a vital infrastructural detail in the huge mechanism of the NSR. However, there is like a huge gap between the official rhetoric and the observed reality. In the slide, one can see very typical quotes about supporting seaports, and there, by the way, are from the same Skolkovo volume from where I have taken the very accurate graphs before that I showed you like several minutes ago. You can see they say that their largest ports of the NSR zone are Igarka, Dudinka, Dikson, Tiksi, and Pivek. And there is also one more quote stating that like Indiga will soon be like a large port hub with railway connection and things like that. If we have a look at these supporting ports, we can see like, yeah, Dudinka is, yeah, it's indeed, it has a high cargo turnover and it has extensive port facilities, right? Pevek, it has more humble facilities and still it more or less looks like a supporting port. And there is like, here's like a famous floating nuclear power plant there. You might know this interesting construction. And then we turn out to other ones. They're mentioning as like the largest port in the NSR zone is not that obvious. Here is a port of Tiksi, which at least works to receive incoming traffic cargo for population, but you know, there is like not so much infrastructure anymore. And then there is Dikson, and you can see this sign plate in the right corner. It says the pier is out of service. The presence and mooring of vessels are prohibited. It does not mean that no vessels use it, or what it is impossible that it is impossible to unload at the roadstead. But by now, it lacks the port infrastructure almost entirely. And the same applies for Igarka. There is almost no facilities at all. But in addition, I deliberately put a map on this slide to make it clear that Igarka is also very deep inside the mainland, like 1,000 kilometers away from the Arctic Sea. And finally, there is Indigo, the place promised to be a hub port. And there is like literally no infrastructure at all. It's only the shore and that's it. And the great depth of the sea in this area and ice-free conditions, they are the main reasons why for a really long time, more than like 100 years, there were plans for port development. There is actually even a magazine article called like the Indiga is the port that cannot be built for 150 years. And it's really like that. Like they've been promised to be built to have infrastructure, but there are none. Several ships for sure are coming to the village, and most of them delivering goods, some exporting of metal scrap. But you know, no infrastructure at all. So one can see that localities different in terms of infrastructure can be named the same names of supporting ports. And their mention does not correlate with the actual port functions, nor it can be explained by the fact that there are simply no other ports, as I told you. And it is actually very telling that Sabetta is not mentioned here, despite the fact that it is like it is responsible for a massive share of cargo turnover along the NSR. This is definitely not an attempt to show that the authors of this volume are wrong. However, they are typical representatives of public discourse, and like common patterns of imagination of the NSR dictate the way of seeing things. And this is reinforced by the fact that the places in question are extremely remote and non-observable from the center. The important question is why this port are mentioned. I would say there are, roughly speaking, three reasons for choosing these particular settlements. The most distinct pattern is the following of Soviet NSR navigation practices, to which most of the points mentioned owe their existence. This is usually supplemented by existing oil and gas production projects and future not always realistic projects like Indiga. The social imagination of this phenomenon is so strong that even if Russia were to conduct a real impact assessment of an infrastructural project on people's lives, probably because of this stable set of supporting ports in social imagination, this assessment would be conducted in them rather than for all coastal communities, some of which often navigate in an open sea for fishing purposes. Dixon, Tixi, Pivek, and actually Amderma, that wasn't mentioned here, are the ports that have lost their significance but still have a very strong NSR identity. At present, the settlements of the Soviet NSR, as I put it, are typical settlements of extensive type, whose inhabitants are mainly engaged in the social sphere. In other words, busy with the maintenance of their own existence, and all the organizations related to the Arctic navigation have ceased to exist. The primary sources of the imagination of the Northern Sea Route are therefore like the modern official discourse transmitted through media and the experience of living in settlements on the Northern Sea Route in Soviet times that entails particular collective identity and imagination of this phenomenon. A political promise of the NSR development that is still highly focused on these communities becomes central for expectations of the future, and at the same time comes into collision with the current state of town's slow decline. Ultimately, it's not surprising that the Northern Sea Route in local people's narratives appears as infrastructure with very different volume and of meaning and spatial configuration than one attempts to define the volume based on current Arctic maritime practices. I would like to elaborate on the case of Dixon as typical for a number of localities, as I told, like Soviet NSR settlements. Their social situation differs in some details, but generally the trend is very similar. To begin with, let's consider how the settlement was formed in connection with the NSR functioning and how Dixon residents historically connected their settlement with the idea of belonging to this infrastructure. The history of the settlement can be traced back to 1915. Then a radio station was opened on Dixon Island to communicate with icebreakers Taimyr and Vaigach, which were passing through the Northern Sea Route and were frozen in the ice for the whole winter. In 1916, a hydrometeorological station and geophysical observatory opened, and actually the common expression Dixon is the weather of kitchen, the weather kitchen, came from these organizations functioning. And since 1929, to provide hydrographic research and work of car expeditions, first of all, ice reconnaissance, a permanent aviation unit appeared on Dixon. Later, the settlement expanded beyond the island. You can see in the slide that like there are two parts of it, and the first one was island part, and the second was the mainland part, continental part. The construction of the port began here in 1934 on continental part, and the coal base for steamships was equipped in 1939. And from the late 30s to 1996, the headquarters of marine operations of the Western Arctic was based here. It became, according to the popular expression of the residents, the capital, and sometimes they say the gateway of the Arctic. Due to changes in technology in course of history, Dixon's purpose as supporting port changed. For example, Dixon lost its role as a coal bunkering base due to the appearance of diesel, electric, and nuclear vessels, and ice reconnaissance by aircraft lost its importance due to the transition to satellite monitoring method. And actually virtually all the organizations in the settlement, including Dixon Stroy, whose task was housing construction, were part of the Northern Sea Route Chief Directorate, Glavsevmurput or GUSMP. It's abbreviation. So the scope of GUSMP authority varied in different years, from supervising almost all issues of development of the north to administering only transportation along the Northern Sea Route. However, it invariably kept the Arctic port settlements under its jurisdiction and, among other things, ensured their supply at a much higher standard than the rest of the country. And until the 90s, all activities to ensure the NSR functioning remained a state project coordinated by one organization. In the 90s, the volume of the Northern Sea Route cargo traffic sharply decreased, and the settlement organizations associated with it experienced a gradual decline. As you have already seen in the pictures, the piers of the seaport of Dixon are currently out of service, and the mooring of vessels of all types is prohibited. And the general wear and tear of the port facilities reach like 70%. The port cargo turnover is about 14 kilotons a year, and the main volume of which is food and fuel. The hydrographic base and network of hydrometeorological stations undergo constant staff reduction and restructuring. While in 1989, the settlement had population of 4,449, by 2018, it's only 548 residents, like 10 times less. Due to the dramatic outflow of population, many buildings have been mothballed. On the island part of the settlement, only the airport and the meteorological station continue to operate, while all the residential buildings and municipal institutions are closed. On the mainland, 10 houses are heated and supplied with water, but many apartments are empty even there. Air service runs only once a week between Dixon and Norilsk, and the airport requires urgent repair of the airstrip and equipment upgrade. So, not quite a positive picture of it. In the slide, you can see the typical nostalgic narratives of the local inhabitants. I actually deliberately choose two of the most common motives. The first one is lamentations about the loss of sense of belonging to the NSR provided by settlement organizations and the symbolic field it entailed. You can see it in the first quote. We would have been the center of the Northern Sea Route while steamers rode on coal, and then was like the Weber Kitchen, capital of the Arctic, and everything else. Yeah, and then there is a bitter feeling that, you know, everything completely turned down, and now we are not sure what's going on with the Northern Sea Route. So common expressions like these, you can see, were a highly significant part of the identity, given that people from all parts of the Soviet Union came to the settlement not just to work, but to follow the popular at that time Arctic agenda and share like the goal of productive labor for the country's development. Thus, it was a community that initially thought of itself as subordinate to a particular goal of being an infrastructure, like provide infrastructure for the Northern Sea Route. And the local community very painfully experiences the disappearance of this goal. And the second motive is a longing for centralized supply, and thus a sense of belonging to the infrastructure of the Northern Sea Route. You see, we just flourished here, you know, in fact, how difficult it was on the mainland, but we thrived here. they had the supply. They had the supply from France, you know, from Geder, France, Paris, everything. In fact, the flows of goods supplied in abundance every summer were a symbol of participation in the crucial collective goal of making this infrastructure work, a sign of their privileged position, no less than their involvement in the organization that supported the navigation in the NSR. In the case of the emergence of a specific industrial or infrastructural facility in the region, one can talk about the expectations formed in the dialogue with company representatives or in the observation of the technologies used by authorities. But for the NSR, the source of expectations related to the development is mainly actually the official discourse, what they've been telling on the TV, and the direct observation of the functioning of the NSR is inaccessible for residents. So perception turn out to be rather vague, as this discourse does not contain any precise answers to the question about the impact of the declared development on the local level. In this quote, you can see several popular tropes drawn from official discourse. You can see climate change, you see like the winter are milder, the ice is thinner, we believe in the prospects of this project, you know, and actually like the comprehension of it as a single project, it's also actually the trope from the official discourse. And at the same time, the person who speaks, she attempts to justify the significance of Dixon for the NSR based on the realities of the previous period, you know, the technological functions of the settlement in Soviet times. You see, nothing has changed, even if we talk about the lack of depth necessary for a large vessel, it does not matter. It is those vessels that accompany the ships, the smaller ones, could use Dixon Harbor as a more convenient one. When it is said on TV that the Northern Sea Route is developing, the community is aware that this community is part of this infrastructure, so they perceive it as information that applies to them. And yet they see no change around them. A variety of rhetorical models in this case come into play. The abundance of such rhetorical models suggests the presence of this contradiction and actually its importance to the community. Thus, in Dixon, the most popular motive in the explanation of the route is the distance, which is, as I said in the beginning, doesn't work like that. There is simply no single route assigned to the NSR. It's like an aquatic area, so it's not like, you know, it can be measured how many kilometers away it is. But still, it's like it's a way of explanation of covering this gap for the community, like to explain why they promise the development, but it doesn't reach us, right? Like in these three quotes, yeah, it's like it doesn't work, it went belly up, or it is like some distance away. Usually it's like, they say usually like 60 kilometers away. Yeah, and the second one, yeah, there's like their own canal, which, yeah, it just doesn't work like that. And I actually will give a rather long example from the settlement of Tixi. Because after everything I told about Dixon, this explanation here is of obvious curiosity. Here we discuss, you know, what's going on, you know, this Northern Sea Route. And they say that we don't have the Northern Sea Route at all. No one has used it for the last 10 years, if not more. It went by via Dixon. Everything goes through Dixon. Nothing goes through Tixi at all. Tixi is dying as a seaport, and there is no money or anything. It has passed, like the route, they don't drop in over the course. In old days they came in, but now they don't. They ship via Dixon, you know, it's they say it's like somewhere far away. And that's also a way of explanation why they can see the changes. So the current promise of infrastructure to the inhabitants of the northern sea route, like Soviet and SR settlements, to a much greater extent has to be guessed and includes like the Soviet era promise. In this connection, the transition from the promise of infrastructure aired on the TV, central TV channels, to practical ways of incorporation into the Northern Sea Route is problematic for the residents of Dixon and other ports, because the source of positive changes is unclear and the residents have no opportunity to influence the situation. And this is the reason why the paradoxical coexistence of the sense of geographical involvement and rhetoric of remoteness from the main road exists. Thus, from the very moment of its emergence, the settlement was in one way or another, I mean Dixon, was connected not only practically but also rhetorically with the Northern Sea Route and with Soviet Arctic agenda in general. And this connection became a part of identity of Dixon residents in late Soviet times, manifesting itself in the still reproduced bright expressions visible in the public space. And the residents tightly associate the Northern Sea Route with the period of prosperity of the settlement. So the decline in transportation along the NSR, as well as in general standard of living of the population in the 90s, was not only an economic crisis, but also crisis of values invested in their experience of living in the settlement. And expectations for the future now are still formed under the influence of this outdated identity and fueled by the official discourse transmission by the mass media. Yeah. I have shown that there are many contradictions in the actual functioning of the NSR compared to its discursive life. Firstly, the stable image of the Northern Sea Route as a transit corridor with growing prospects due to the climate change and an alternative to a Suez Canal. It breaks down against the real picture of traffic along the NSR, where the main role is played by the export of hydrocarbons, small volume of fuel and food delivery to coastal communities, and insignificant transit. Representatives of different species of ship traffic often use such different infrastructure and technology and differ so much in size that sometimes they are even unaware of each other. And for different user publics, the discursively unified NSR turns out to be different Northern Sea routes with varying configurations of infrastructures and services. In infrastructural terms, it would be correct to describe the NSR as a limited sea area with specific navigation conditions and several coastal infrastructural assemblages involved. However, it is imagined as a line longer than the aquatic area defined by the law and extending to the west and southeast up to hub ports. On this line, like beads on the string, supporting ports are strung together, settlements which are imagined to be a part of the infrastructure. And they are chosen according to several principles, like their role in the past stage of NSR functioning, actual size of hydrocarbon production, as well the future and often unrealistic projects. And only on a political level, the level of promises of development, does the Northern Sea Route appear to be a coherent year-round infrastructure, which often makes it difficult to access the actual material and technical conditions of the NSR empirically. the discursive work of assembling of different types of shipping across the Arctic seas into a coherent narrative is carried out by representatives of Russian federal and regional administrations. And the affirmation of the NSR as infrastructure is a performative gesture that makes one see the NSR as a mega infrastructure that works in accordance with declarations of Russian officials. Political rhetoric makes the NSR an infrastructure no less than navigational and logistical systems. The coastal communities of the NSR aquatic area are directly influenced by the gap between the discursive image of the NSR and its practical use. Nowadays, the main function of the NSR in the life of port settlements is supplying the settlement population with fuel and goods. And other ways of perceiving the NSR by local communities are at discursive level. Port residents share expectations of growth, like port and renovation, population increase, and they are caused by the declared development of the NSR. So it makes like the NSR a special case of infrastructure, unobservable for most communities that feel involved in it. Heirs of such large Soviet ports as Dikson, Amdrumah, or Tiksi feel nostalgia for those important functions that their settlements performed as part of the NSR infrastructure, as well as the ongoing involvement in that infrastructure fueled by the official discourse. In the Soviet settlements of the NSR, the social imagination of the Northern Sea Route consists of a complex layering of reception of modern public discourse, memories, and oral history of the NSR functioning in Soviet time and the role of the settlement in it. Their expectations of the future are formed primarily in connection with expectations of the development of the settlement as part of the NSR, which, in addition to material well-being, would bring escape from crisis of values invested in the experience of living in this settlement. But like the half-destroyed slogans in the title of my presentation, the Northern Sea Route though it persists as a pale copy in the identity of communities, has already ceased to function for them. Thank you so much.